You going to lead us? Introduce yourself and your team.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Randall Carolison. I'm with the South African Revenue Service, and I'm responsible for revenue planning, analysis, and reporting. I will ask my colleague from Treasury, National Treasury, and my other colleague from SARS to introduce themselves.
I'm Raymond Sithole from the Tax Policy Unit. Raymond Sithole, Tax Policy.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Dion Breckenbach, Revenue Analysis and Planning SARS.
Thank you, Chair. What we have attempted in this presentation is to make more use of graphs and other statistical tools to lift out the vast amount of statistical data that's presented in our tax statistics. And we intend to, into the future, to have such summary notes attached to our tax statistics. We will have our own presentation done in the following manner, and we'll share the presentation between the three of us. We look at the tax statistics of Africa, we look at some of the initial feedbacks and comments that we received, we look at some of the 2009 tax statistics, some of the proposed changes from the 2008 tax statistics, and then we'll give an overview of the different chapters. We will then also put through to the committee some of our thinking on future improvements and developments, and then invite comments, queries, and suggestions as with regards to improvement. Next slide, please. We have received the tax statistics publication was conceived with the following objectives in mind: is to make selected information available as required by the Promotion for Access to Information Act and for general information for parties interested in the profile of the African taxpaying public, to provide tables of statistics that will assist economists and research professionals in the preparation and analysis of economic estimates, as well as the impact analysis insofar as tax revenue is a function of economic activity, to provide information to be used to those who require detailed taxpayer data per tax type, and to provide the private sector with information that they could use in their marketing and their commercial planning. We've had received a large amount of feedback and comments from after the publication of the 2008 tax statistics, and for your noting, we have included some of them. Next slide, please. Slide 4. The second edition of the tax statistics was released on the 18th of March 2010, and the objectives I have described earlier is to make available comprehensive tax revenue data that remains valid and that will continue to underpin the 2009 tax statistics. Next slide. The changes from the 2008 tax statistics take into account the suggestions and comments that were made on the 2008 tax statistics. The following improvements or enhancements were made. We've included a new table on CGT, capital gains tax. The taxable income group for the CIT chapter were regrouped to provide a more representative spread of taxable income. And some of these taxable income groups were also consolidated into one group, and others were expanded to more groups. We've included a glossary. All the tables were included at the back of the publication. The tax registers for both individuals and companies now exclude the coded cases where the status was in suspense, estate, or address unknown. I will now ask my colleague from National Treasury, Raymond, to take us through the overview, Chapter 1.
As my colleague has already pointed out, Chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and Chapter 1 is the overview of revenue collection. This chapter, we look at the South African government revenue, of course, with the emphasis on budget revenue and revenue performance being on the basis of looking at the trends, historical data. We look at as well the effects, or rather the data based on looking at the tax relief. Particularly if you look at PIT and tax rates changes like CIT. We look at the number of registered taxpayers as well. And we also look at the tax revenue based on the main source and also based on the main category. Surely you, just for terminology purposes, you realize that the slide, the table there, it has national taxes, and they constitute in there about 98% of tax revenue, and about 26.2% of GDP for the year 2008 or 2009. And yet, at the same time, total budget revenue as a percentage of GDP is about 26.2. For the previous year, 26.9. So, tax revenue, obviously, you see there's surely a difference between the tax revenue and the total budget. I mean, that's for. Just for technical purposes, thought it would be very important that we emphasize on that. And then the next slides, you pick up that we've got the next slide. We also classify the in the next slide. We also discuss about the. Number the tax revenue collection based on the number of taxpayers registered as individuals, classifying them as companies, trusts, payee, and VAT vendors, and you realize that towards particularly as year-on-year growth. Has been slowing down in some of the years, in most of the categories, and particularly with VAT, the year-on-year has not only slowed down, but it has decreased. And but then it's not worthy that the individual taxpayer register should increase significantly with compulsory, considering that there's going to be compulsory registration of employees by employers. So we expect these numbers to increase significantly going forward. In the next slide, we pick up as well that the PIT, CIT, and VAT, out of all the categories, we find that PIT, CIT, and VAT and customs duties contribute about over 85% of national taxes, which is highly significant. And then of late, we've been seeing PIT tax relief, and which have resulted in the reduction of the PIT contribution of the total. Like you see the red, I don't know, because I'm colorblind, but what would be kind of like reddish or brown is you'll see that in the over the years, it has been reducing. It was based on the fact that there's been tax relief. At the same time, CIT has been increasing, despite the fact that there's been a cut in the tax rates. So, which means the reason why there's been increased CIT has been mainly because of the tax reforms and the capital gains reforms and things like that. Generally, when there's lower tax. Companies tend to compete more, and then there's also the aspect of efficiency in tax collection.
Raymond?
Yes.
Maybe I'm just too slow to can understand.
Yes.
You're presenting very raw data to us without talking to it. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Yeah. Maybe I don't have a better way of putting it. Just continue. We'll see how we interact with it, because it's a very important submission to us. If we're just to be a little bit elaborate as you talk to this issue.
Okay. Maybe for emphasis purposes. Okay, the next slide, I think it will show you what I'm talking about, probably.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
If you say PIT over the years has been either declining or what, but you're not saying this is the observation. It's the observation that is there.
Yeah.
But you're not telling us why.
Like I pointed out earlier in the previous slides, there has been tax relief in the PIT, right? And then and over the years, those PIT tax relief has resulted in the reduction of the PIT contribution. That's my point, and as far as PIT is concerned. That is what you pick up in the next slide. We looked at 1999 to 2000 fiscal year versus 2008-09 fiscal year. Found that PIT was 43% and now it has gone down 31%. That's clearer there. So that was as a result of tax relief. CIT, yes, excuse me? In the main categories, yes. Yeah, that's the main reason why it was like that. Of course, yes. We just picked up 1999 or 2000, but if you look at even the most recent years, it's also a reflection of that. This is just a peak. The highest peak, the peak was in 1999 or 2000. And then with CIT, the inverse story is explained in that 1999 or 2000, it was 10% of the contribution and now it's 26%. The reason being, like I pointed out, that whenever you reduce your tax rates, I mean, logic has it that when you reduce your tax rate, you're going to collect less tax. But in reality, most companies who will be avoiding tax become more willing to declare their tax because of that. So they tend to be more tax collections based on that. But then there's also been other reforms like the capital gains tax as well. And maybe my colleagues could add on that as well.
If I just address this point also, is that what you're seeing is that CIT has edged out PIT basically as becoming more to the front of producing a sizable contribution to the tax collected. So my colleague has pointed out some of the policy relief things that have happened, but also CIT, despite the fact that the tax rate has been dropped from 30 to 28%, CIT has increased because of the significant real growth that we had in the economy. And that is reflected in improved CIT collections and as well as through some improved compliance programs that we've been running. So CIT is taking its rightful role and there's of course more room for improvement.
Yeah, and then I'm sure you will notice that VAT has just been almost flat. It has increased slightly, but there's nothing really to write home about. And then in the next slide, we also analyze the trends in as far as the monthly revenue collections is concerned. And I'm sure you'll see that towards the end of each quarter, like June, September, December, and March, there's been some peaks there. And this is largely because most companies pay at the end of the quarter. I mean, their financial years are at the end of the quarter, so which means that they actually bring that. So it's mainly the contribution of CIT there. And by the way, these gross collections include PIT as well. I mean, PIT and VAT and everything. But then the main contribution, why were those spikes, was because of the companies. In the next slide, you realize that also. Next graph, there's also. We also categorize that based on quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four for the past 3 years. And you'll see that quarter four, in all the fiscal years, quarter four has been has shown the highest collections. And although you also pick up that the collection patterns over the last 3 years changed marginally. In other words, in the first quarter, 2008 has been the largest, and then second quarter has been almost like neutral, and third quarter has been neutral, and then on the fourth quarter, it has actually declined relative to the other years. And this obviously can easily be explained by the economic dynamics based on the recession and many other things. So, and if you go to the next slide, we also analyze the revenue collections based on the companies and individuals and versus, I mean, companies versus individuals, and we also look at the cumulative of total. That is looking particularly at the capital gains tax. I'm sure you'll be aware if you looked at our previous publication of the tax statistics. We didn't have a publication on the capital gains tax. This is coming for the first time, and we're also gonna try to. I mean, we're gonna make sure that it comes in the future years. And then obviously the trends will reflect to you that there's an exponential growth in capital gains tax declarations, mainly obviously because of the growth in assets. In as much as we all know that, for instance, the properties industry, there's been a slowdown a bit in as far as the rates, I mean the value is concerned, but it has been an increase in a decreasing rate. It's not like there has been a complete decrease. So by implication, what that means is that companies have actually been paying more over the years, and even individuals, there's been an exponential growth, and we don't expect in the future years that there be a slowdown at all. And my colleague is going to pick up from and talk about those. We're going to start talking about those individual tax categories, PIT, CIT, and the rest.
Thanks, Raymond. I'll take over from this for this section of the presentation. Next slide, please. I will be talking to the personal income tax statistics. Income tax data is based on the assessed PIT returns for a particular tax year, and the data that we're presenting is as at the end of March 2009. What's important in this slide is that we have on our register 5.5 million individual taxpayers that were registered for the 2008 tax year. And as my colleague has pointed out, that this registration is going to increase quite dramatically once the provision kicks in for employers to register all the employees. We expect the number of registrations to double to about 11 million if we were to take the labor force survey as a guide for that. The main difference in the 2008 assessed as opposed to registered is because at that point we were still receiving provisional returns that had to be assessed at that point. And looking back now to that figure, it should be more like 4 million if we add those additional returns in there. Also, the reason why we have a relatively large difference between the registered taxpayers and those assessed is because some site taxpayers are appearing on our register, and that should not actually be on the register, but for historical purposes remain on the register because of medical aid claims in prior years and other deductions that were claimed. Next slide. This slide seeks to illustrate the effect of fiscal relief. This is the relief granted to counter the effects of inflation, and the percentage tax assessed as a percentage of taxable income remained relatively flat, and this tells us that the fiscal relief actually did play its part in protecting taxpayers against the ravages of inflation. Next slide. This slide wishes to show or illustrates the contributions of the different taxpayer categories to the tax net. Important to note that the largest number of taxpayers reside in the taxable income group below 150,000. These constitute about 70% of the assessed taxpayers, but they end up paying only 17.4% of the tax that were collected. There are only 5.6% taxpayers above 400,000 taxable income, and they pay up about 45% of the tax. It should also be noted that there's a step change in the horizontal axis. If you were to go to the 150,000 to 200,000 group, the increments change from 10,000 to 50,000, and that is why we have a spike there. We have included the lower categories of taxpayers to show under threshold taxpayers that were liable, and in fact there were some negatives as well. These include taxpayers that operate business running at a loss, people that have submitted medical claims, and retirement annuities.
Next slide, please.
Maybe it's because we have not done this before. I always say to my driver, whose phone is this? I always say to my driver, if you get a traffic ticket because of speed and I didn't ask you to drive fast, I'm not going to pay for it. You're running very fast. You're running very, very fast. You see, the presentation in your boardroom amongst yourselves is different from when you're presenting to politicians. I'm just saying, go slowly so that we can grasp the things that you're presenting. There's no plane that is going to leave you.
No, we've got more in the
Yeah. Just start at slide number 3, PIT.
Okay.
Summary on taxable income. You spoke about, the first one was about the 5.5 million individuals who were registered in 2008.
Yes.
And then come down on the next slide. Don't rush, you know, just take us through properly.
Okay, my apologies, Jim. Slide 15, Chapter 2, PIT 3, it puts forward the summary of the taxable income and the amount of tax that was assessed. And what we have done is to illustrate the effect of the percentage of the tax that's assessed as a percentage of taxable income. Now, throughout the 5 years, from 4 years that are shown here, from 2005 to 2008, tax assessed taxable incomes remained relatively stable. That means that although taxable income had gone up due to inflation, the assessed tax was matched to that inflation through the fiscal drag, through the fiscal relief that was granted to taxpayers, keeping the percentage of taxable income, tax assessed to taxable income relatively stable. I should also add at this point that the relief granted to taxpayers was the biggest relief was in the PIT category was granted to taxpayers. And even last year when times were tough, there was still significant tax relief that was granted. And that is important in an inflationary environment that people do not lose out due to bracket creep. Some of the statistics that we have in here, in fact, what we've seen in 2009 is a similar trend, so that the effect of the fiscal relief policy that kicked in there did assist taxpayers even in the difficult times of the recession that we just emerged from. If you go to the next text slide, it shows the taxpayer categories in the different income groups and their contribution to the overall tax. For illustrative purposes, if you were to take tax assessed in the 150,000 to 200,000 category, we would see that we have the tax assessed in that category would be about of the order of 12 billion rand, and there would be about just short of 400,000 taxpayers in that particular category. What it does point out is that we have a large number of taxpayers that in the taxable income group, which is below 150,000. And although they are the largest,
They in fact constitute 70% of all the CES taxpayers. They contribute about 17.4% to the total tax in this category. If you take the high end on the other hand, there are only 5.6 taxpayers above 400,000 taxable income, and they pay 45% of the total tax. This illustrates that the tax burden is on the upper, on the higher side of the income brackets, and that we, although that is the case, we have to take into account the growth in the contributions on the lower side, because that determines the progression of individuals in the economy, and this is a thing that needs to be monitored on a continuous basis. We have in the full tax statistics the year-on-year statistics. We decided to pull this out as a snapshot to show the illustrative, to show the power of this type of information. Then also, as I pointed out earlier, is we the below threshold taxpayers that were assessed, they are in this assessed bracket, and although they're below threshold, because of loss-making businesses that they own or they find themselves involved in, people that have claimed medical aids and retirement annuities, and therefore had to submit a return for assessment purposes. People that are not people that do not submit or that are not required to submit are obviously not in this category, and that is the balance of those other people that we were talking about earlier, that through the compulsory registration of taxpayers will eventually be included in this type of statistic. Next slide. This shows the provincial breakdown of taxpayers, and we've used the 2007 year for illustrative purposes. It is quite clear that Gauteng accounts for most of the taxpayers and also for most of the tax that have been assessed. The provincial breakdown is, however, based on the on where the taxpayer is registered and not where the taxpayer is necessarily employed. Although in the PIT category, it is not as dramatic as in the CIT category. The CIT category, most of the large corporates are registered with the large business center, which is in Gauteng, and therefore the CIT registration CIT registration in the place of economic activity is not necessarily the same. We do take that, however, in account when we do economic analysis per province. Next slide, please. This slide shows the gender distribution and the contribution to the tax assessed. Females account for 40% of the number of assessed taxpayers, yet their tax assessed constitute only 28% of the tax assessed. We do see an increasing trend, however, and we believe that eventually there will be a matching, we don't know when, but into the future we do see that in some states there will be a convergence between the number of female taxpayers and the tax contribution to the country. Next slide. This just shows a summary of all the taxable income and the tax assessed. And here we make specific reference to particular tables, and we've lifted out particular salient points from that tables. In tables 8221 to 8222, it's a source of income as declared by the taxpayer. And the main takeaway from that table is that the largest number of taxpayers are employed in the financing, insurance, the real estate, and the business services sector. The economic activity, table 822.3, it's a reclassification of the SARS source code according to the SIC, or the Standard Industrial Classification Codes used by Statistics South Africa. There's currently not sufficient alignment between the classification of SARS and that of Stats SA, and a project is underway to align these codes. The difference in alignment is due to historic reasons, which goes back many years, but it is a source of, it is a problem that needs to be addressed. Table 8224 is the source of income as on the IRP5 certificates. It's based on sectors as indicated by the employer on the employee's IRP5 form. Again, we want to point out that due to some large corporates having diversified into areas other than their main businesses, that type of information also need to be disaggregated for proper inclusion in the correct sector code. Tables 823.1 and 823.2 deals with individual taxpayers with business income. This constitutes around 4% of total individual taxpayers. It contributes almost one-third of its total assessed income in the financing, insurance, and real estate and business services sector. So what this tells us is that most of the individual taxpayers with their business income, although it's a small amount, only 4% of the total base, that most of them find themselves in the financing and in the service sectors. On average, around 22% of these taxpayers recorded negative taxable income. So some of these guys are still struggling, and we've seen an increase in that during the recession as well. Next slide. This goes into a bit more detail, Mr. Chairman. And here we have detailed the individual taxpayers' allowances, the fringe benefits and the deductions, and what that cost, what is the cost to that to the fiscus, if I can put it that way. If you look at the allowances, the largest share of allowances is the travel allowance. And this allowance is anticipated to be decreasing with the scrapping of the deemed business kilometer rule. The value of this allowance in the 2007 tax year constituted 27 billion rand. The others are the smaller amounts that we could look at. The second one would be around 13 billion. That would be for computer allowances, and then we have other smaller allowances that are detailed. These are sums that are paid out by the employers to employees to do their jobs. If you move to the next slide, where we look at the different fringe benefits. The largest fringe benefit, or the largest share of fringe benefits, is medical scheme contributions, which are paid on behalf of the employee. And this is contrasted with various other smaller fringe benefits, like the right of the use of the asset, low or interest-free loans, and bursaries and scholarship. And this is also something which the policy colleagues in Treasury are taking a very stern look at. If we look at deductions, next slide. Individual taxpayer allowances, the largest share of deductions is the contributions to retirement funding. If one were to look at the travel expenses claimed against the allowances, if you bear my previous remark in mind, which I said that the allowances that were made for travel allowance constituted 27 billion, yet on the other side of the coin, only 17 billion is claimed. It means that there is still a difference of about 10 billion that must be accounted for, that must come through the returns of these individuals. That, Mr. Chairman, is the PIT summary of the data that we have in the tax statistics. Of course, under this, there's vast amount of other data that will explain trends over the years. And what we've done here is to just take snapshots to show you how some of this data is interpreted and what the significance of it. I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Dion Breitenbach, to take us through the CIT chapter.
To the corporate income tax chapter. Just an overview of the chapter. It contains information on the number of companies, on the provisional tax payments by tax year, taxable income and tax assessed by taxable income groups, the same information by sector, and it also breaks down the information by assessed loss and profit. If we go to the next slide, you will notice on the number of companies that the number of companies have actually, the number of registrations has increased quite dramatically. Yet if you have a look at the number of assessed companies, you will see that, for example, for the 2008 year, only 189,000 companies have been assessed. So the question could be asked, but why have we only assessed 189,000 companies if there's 1.8 million companies on register? There's a fairly large number of companies that are registered but which are dormant. These are companies that would hold assets. In the past, these companies also, companies were established for tax planning purposes and for the companies would, for example, be held by trust, and these trusts then enabled assets to be passed on to individuals if the establisher of the trust should pass away. The changes to the tax legislation has made this now an unpopular avenue to follow. If you look at the next chapter, this gives a breakdown of the provisional tax payments by tax year. The table is fairly complex and it actually needs some explanation. It's important to understand that if one looks at the difference between a company and an individual, individuals are allowed to have, the majority of individuals, 99% of individuals have tax year ends at the end of February, which means their payments will be collected during a period of from March to February. A company can, however, choose its own financial year end. So if we look at a financial year end of a company, if we say, for example, the 2005 year, it means that company could have a financial year end at the end of January or at the end of December. Now, companies pay their provisional tax payments in three installments. The first installment is paid 6 months after the start, the second one 12 months, and the last one 18 months after the start. So that actually means that for any given tax year, the money is actually collected over a three-year period. That's also why one would see now with the financial crisis, that the financial crisis will also have an effect on even on the current year, because the payments of the last year will also spill over into this year, because the payments happen 18 months after the end of the financial year. So this just gives a breakdown of how the monies are collected. It's roughly, one just looks there, for example, the 2008-09 year, you will see that we've collected 9 billion rand. Let's have a look at a year that is at least fairly complete. If you look at the 2006 tax year, you will see that 30 billion was collected in the 2005-06 fiscal year, 68 billion in the 2006-07, and only 8 billion in the 2007-08 tax year. So if you are interested in looking at the information by tax year, you need to look across, and if you're interested in the collections by fiscal year, which is the money that would be reflected in the budget review, you need to look at the collections downwards. If we go to the next slide, the next slide shows that roughly the bars is reflective of the number of taxpayers, while the line indicates the tax assessed. It shows that roughly about one-third of the companies have a taxable income of below zero, a third have a taxable income equal to zero, and a third have taxable income greater than zero. However, the companies that have a taxable income greater than zero, about 50% of the total income tax that is assessed is paid by companies with taxable income in excess of 200 million. So you'll see on the graph itself, the bar doesn't even display any. You can't even see it on the graph, because it's so few companies that actually end up paying for about 50% of the total corporate tax. So this is quite different from individuals, where the spread is more even throughout. Okay. The next chapter shows the taxable income and the tax assessed by the different categories or sectors. Again, there you will see that the most significant contribution comes from the finance and insurance and real estate and business services sector, where the number of taxpayers in there is about 30. If I look at the 2008 year, it's about 35.9%. And the tax that is collected from that sector is about 27.7%. That sector would include banks, insurers, etc. If we go to the next chapter, the next chapter deals with value-added tax. It breaks down the. It provides information on the number of registered vendors, it provides information on domestic VAT, and it provides information on turnover. The domestic VAT and customs VAT and VAT refunds are the three components of VAT. But close to 70% of the revenue is collected from domestic VAT. On the number of registered vendors, when Raymond went through the register, he mentioned that there was a significant decline or a decline in registered vendors during 2008 or 2009. The reason for that was that there was a cleanup of the VAT register and a number of inactive vendors were removed. Stricter registration requirements were also implemented to ensure that only valid vendors register on the system. On the domestic VAT, on the next slide, it basically gives again the breakdown of the VAT payments and refunds by sector. Of interest here would be, for example, on the mining sector, since the mining sector is mostly involved in exporting minerals. The export is zero rated, so you will see that on the mining side that their refunds actually constitute 16.9% of total refunds, but their payments on VAT constitute a very small portion of the payments, only 2.8%. The only VAT that we would collect from the mining sector would be on domestic sales. The other one here that is of interest, again, is the financing sector. You can see that the financing sector pays the majority of the VAT about for the 2008-09 year. They end up paying about close on 32% of the total VAT that is collected. You will see a category in the table, the very first category, that refers to agencies and other services. The manner in which these categories are recorded is dependent on when the vendor registers. So the vendor actually indicates in which category he falls. In the past, the vendors, if they were not sure into which category they would fall, they would just by default indicate that they are actually in the agency and other services sector. So that's actually the reason why that agency and other services sector seems so big. If we go to the next slide. The next slide gives a breakdown of the category of vendors in terms of when they need to make payments. Vendors need to make monthly payments if the annual turnover is in excess of 30 million rand a year. And then if their turnover is below that, they can basically make a choice if they want to be a bi-monthly vendor. And then we have two bi-monthly categories, a January and February category. You will see that the bi-monthly February category is significantly bigger than the bi-monthly January category. The only reason for that is that a number of the smaller vendors will all have February year ends, and they would prefer that their VAT period would coincide with their tax liability, so that they do not have to split their VAT liability over a period. Then also, if you have a look at which type of enterprises are registered, you'll see we have individuals, partnerships, companies. We have local authorities as well, associations not for gain, clubs, and welfare organizations. Again, the two biggest groupings would be individuals and companies. In terms of the size of numbers, individuals about, if you look at the 2008-09, is about 22% versus the company 67%. But even though individuals are 22%, they actually only pay about 3.6% of the 3.6% of the VAT, whereas companies actually end up paying close on 90% of the VAT collected. The sole reason again for that would be that the individual's business would normally be relatively small, and as soon as his business starts growing significantly, he would start a company or convert his business into a company. On the next slide gives a breakdown of the 2008-09 collections in terms of the payments and the refunds that were made, in terms of the turnover of those companies. The turnover here is an annualized turnover. Simply, if one looks at the payments and refunds that SARS makes during a year, these payments and refunds will relate to a variety of tax periods. So if, for example, a tax auditor goes out now, he could raise an assessment on the 2005 tax period, and those payments will be included in 2008 or 2009. But now, to calculate the turnover, it would not make sense to actually bring into account this 2005 tax period to calculate the turnover. So what the SARS system does, The SAR system automatically calculates turnover based on the last 12 returns that were submitted, and if any returns were missing, the system would make an adjustment to annualize the turnover. And that's why also why we do not have comparative figures for 2007-08-06, simply because the system, each time that it creates the annualized turnover, it overwrites the previous record of that. Okay. Dr. Randall Kurelson will do the customs duties.
Thank you, John. Chapter 5 deals with customs import duty. This chapter overviews customs VAT, customs duty, ad valorem excise duties on imports. The data is based on data that's collected from bills of entry and imports of entry, and not actual imports.
My apologies. The data based on this chapter is based on data that's collected from bills of entries that are processed at the ports of entries and not actual revenue collections. Customs value of imports, customs VAT, customs import duties and excise duties on in imports by sectors, the main sectoral trends are: machinery and mechanical appliances, electrical equipment is the category that accounts for the largest value of goods of that are imported. Import customs duty revenues are mostly derived from vehicles, aircraft, vessels and associated transport equipment, textile and textile articles, machinery and mechanical appliances, electric equipment and prepared foodstuffs, beverages, spirits and vinegar. Ad valorem excise duty revenues are mostly derived from the vehicle sector, aircraft, vessels and associated transport equipment, and machinery, mechanical appliances, electrical equipment categories. That, Chair, is an overview of the different chapters. Through our interactions with the general public, with academics, and with fora such as yourself, we have identified the future developments that we are now considering for inclusion in the next edition. It's the expansion of the PIT data to include a breakdown of the income of taxpayers. In other words, breakdown salaries, commission, investment income, and other subcategories. This is in large way we're able to do that because of our modernization program, which now have access to various sources of third-party data, which will also then serve to enrich our tax statistics publication. We intend to do PIT provisional tax breakdown by period and by number of payments, as opposed to some of the aggregated numbers that were presented by Dion, that show that it's quite difficult to de-aggregate payment patterns from individual taxpayers. We are going to look at assessment payments and refunds to taxpayers in a bit more detail, because as you can well appreciate, that's an area of that could become an area of leakage if not properly dealt with. We would also wish to do a breakdown of employees' tax, UIF, and unemployment fund and skills development levy by sectors and by CETAs, and the size of that by payments as well. We are going to look at expanding to CIT to include information of companies that are being taxed under the small business corporation regime and whatever benefits they derive from that. Capital gains tax section is going to be expanded to include gross gains and losses, as well as exemptions and exclusions that have been granted. We're going to publish data on security transfer tax and transfer duty. We are going to expand the section on VAT to include the value of output tax and input tax declared. We are going to look at turnover as declared, and we'll split it between standard rated turnover, zero rated, and exempt turnover. Another technological innovation that we are going to present is we are going to provide more regular updates on the web and key selected assessment data, and we are probably going to be looking at a six-month to quarterly update in that area. That will not remove the annual publication that as you have it in hard copy in front of you, but this will allow for a much quicker turnaround time and trend analysis. We continue to hope to improve on subsequent publications and of course also look at international benchmarks. We've looked at similar publications from other countries, and we are using all these inputs to enhance what we believe is a very important source of data for policymakers and economists and the academic world in general. We have held workshops with the users of tax statistics And we're going to expand those workshops to include a much wider input from a much wider forum. For instance, most of the workshops that we held previously were held in Gauteng, and we are now planning to have similar workshops in the major centers of South Africa in planning the next edition. And as I said earlier, Chairman, we have an electronic version of this publication on the SARS as well as the Treasury website, and that we have made provision on those websites for comments, queries, and suggestions that can be incorporated. We look forward to the 2010 tax statistics to be released closer towards the end of the year. We're looking at the release date of around October, and then the implementation then of the subsequent electronic updates to be followed by the release of our copy. We thank you for your time, and we apologize if you appear to be in a hurry. I think it's probably more nervousness than not showing respect.
Nervous in front of me. I don't know what you'll do if you appear to others. Thanks for your presentation. I think the committee members are free to interact with the submissions. Is there any other information that you want to add before?
No.
I earlier said Ron, but you are Randall.
I'm Randall.
Yeah.
I was the nervous to correct you.
No, I was just making an abbreviation of Randall when I said Ron. Honorable Des, followed by Honorable Luyenge, Dr. Luyenge, and you'll be followed by Dr. Dion George, Honorable Spidla, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. I was trying, Chair, to link this presentation with the previous presentation on the tax, I mean the protocols that has been entered with various countries. And I will request the members maybe to assist me to be able to trace the yield of these protocols into this, the aspects of our, I mean, they are used into the broader tax base. How do I use these tax statistics, I mean, to follow on this particular, I mean, the development, if there are any yields as earlier, I mean, projected? And then secondly, Chair, I want to understand the structure of the workshops that have been referred to. What goes into those workshops as compared to what is presented to us here? I'm asking this question specifically, Chair, to check if is there any provision for us to be part of these workshops, or what we get here is suffices, I mean to ensure that we are properly empowered to oversee, I mean, this particular activity. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mine, Chair, is on the role of the citizens participating on these matters, especially on issues of registrations. There is a lot of money that can be collected if ordinary people are aware that to pay tax is not a penalty. So is there any mechanism that can be employed to ensure that the public education or awareness programs, so that all the tax-paying concerns are quite aware of the importance to participate in this activity, because it is very important. It assists both the paying concerns and government. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page number 11 of the report, the tax statistics, there's reference to the plastic bags levy. But in the documents at the end, when we get the numbers, I can't seem to find, you know, how much was actually collected. So my question is this thing still in place? And if so, where would I find out how much collected? But particularly I'm interested in the qualitative issue here, is that the levy aimed to encourage the sustainable use of these bags. Now, I want to know is whether that tax actually was successful in achieving its objective or not. And then on page number 14 and 15, the bottom of page number 14, it talks about the number of individual taxpayers. Now, obviously, between 2007 and 8, it went up by about 336,000 people. And then on the next page, the taxable assessments or taxable income and tax assessed, between 7 and 8, that number fell by 968,950. Now, I know there's an explanation of that some people don't get assessed because, you know, there's certain limits, etc. But somehow that number doesn't seem to make sense to me because we kind of lost 968,000 assessments, but we, you know, only accumulated 336,000 new taxpayers. So, you know, it looks just a bit odd. There must be an explanation, but I'd like to know what it is. And then on page number 20, where we're looking at the number of companies, in 2007-08, the number went up from 1.58 million to 1.83 million. But the number assessed actually fell quite substantially. I know that there's a certain cutoff date, I suppose, that there's stuff in progress. But in 2007, the number was significantly lower as well. Between, you know, the assessments, it was 575 in 2006, 379 in 7, and in 8, 189. So is there a logic in here, or is it, or does this say that the assessment process is running behind or falling over in some way? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My first question, Chairperson, you partly covered it on your earlier question to the presenters, but I still want them to elaborate further in relation to the PIT reductions. I just want to check what are other contributing factors besides the tax relief that was granted to the taxpayers. Chairperson, a point was made by the presenters that the growth that we see on CIT is because companies, they now voluntarily come forward and disclose whatever. I'm interested to know if SARS know what are those companies that are out there that are not coming forward, and can they quantify that in terms of the rents? Chairperson, I didn't get it clear from the presenters when they were explaining the difference between the registered taxpayers and those that are assessed by the institutions. If they can repeat that, I would appreciate. Slide 6, Chair, on the PIT presentation indicates that women contribute less than their male counterparts. Again, Chair, I just want to check with SARS if they know the causes of this situation. Is it because of the historical issues, or is it because there are less women that are actively participating in the economy, or those that are participating are at the very lowest levels in our economy? I just want to check if SARS can assist us on that. Thank you.
Yes, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Chair. We will divide some of the questions up amongst each other, but I think let me deal with the earlier remarks that were made, and then I'll ask some of my colleagues to put forward some of their views. The link with the tax protocols and the overall tax haven debate that is currently going on, of course,
one would like to see what is the economic impact and the tax, the detailed impacts of such newly revealed data that is now coming to into our environment. And yet, in some cases, it's way too new to assess whether the tax havens are fully compliant, to what extent they are compliant. However, having said that, Chair, we have access to some studies that estimate some of the based on macroeconomic factors and international flow of equity funds and all of those things. We have access to some of those data, and from that, we are trying to form a picture as to what is the tax estimate of capital flight, and what is it, the tax loss to a particular country. And in particular, in the African context, we have a study that shows quite clearly that the demand of development aid that Africa receives is minuscule if you put that against the amount of capital that flies out of Africa. And South Africa is also affected by that. But I think the bottom line is that we are not in a position to take a definite statistical view in with that regard and the impact thereof. But certainly it is something that we need to work towards, because that is the major gaps that we currently have. With regards to that, I want to take it just a little bit further also, Jeff, if you allow me to. It's the whole issue in the debate about whether you should include compliance indicators in reports such as this. In other words, how many people do not file, how many people pay late, and all of those things. And the current consensus is that it would, at the moment, be counterproductive. It would stymie some of our programs that we are currently implementing to close those gaps. But this is an ongoing debate, and certainly a debate that we would like to have some guidance from people such as yourselves. So although the whole issue about the compliance indicators and matters pertaining to that, that is a subject that we need to debate in a bit more detail. I know I've seen it in the USA, they publish compliance indicators, and they publish data that I've just now referred to. But with regards to the bigger impact of the tax protocols, that is still a lot of work that we have to do in that area, and I would not even begin to offer some statistics in that regard as we speak now. With regards to the structure of workshops, our invitations are fairly open. We would like to have as many people involved and engaged, because what we find is that the more wider representation we have, is the better the quality of our improvements. And I need to check with my principals, but I actually can't see anything that would prevent this committee from making input or participate in such workshops. And of course, at these workshops, we do go into a lot more detail. We work through trends and we work through all these tables that we have in the tax statistic, and which we have had to unfortunately shorten dramatically for the purpose of this presentation. And I think some of the shortening has actually lost some of the richness that you can find in this data. So we will make available certainly to you the dates of the workshops and the venues of the workshops. And I will confer. I'll discuss with my commissioner as to what form the invitations to yourself should take. The role of citizens participating in the broader tax debate, if you could put it that, SARS has got a comprehensive education and outreach program, which include studies which look at our current footprint, the appropriateness of our current footprint. Do we have offices in the right places? Do we need to expand offices? Do we need to co-locate with other government agencies? And there's quite a comprehensive document on that. We also have a comprehensive education strategy for outreach and make people aware, especially going the route that we have elected to go with regards to modernization, the e-filing requirements and stuff like that. But certainly, I think personally that we should get more consultation on that regard. We also have developed literature for schools to explain tax liability and the importance of that for overall fiscal citizenship. But certainly any comments that will assist us, that we can take back with us to our colleagues at SARS to be included, would be most welcome. Let me just deal with the gender contribution. The gender contribution in essence reflects that we have a substantial participation of women in the economy, 45%, but that the gap between incomes is still there. And I mean, we see it in the upper layers, the amount of women directors and the amount of women in top management positions. And if you bear in mind that most of the tax come in any case from those top level
sectors, then that speaks to this, the fact that women have shows a lesser contribution to the tax contribution in South Africa. So that we believe is the answer that we have for that question. I'll ask Dion and my colleague Raymond to address some of the other issues. Dion, the plastic levy, I'm sure you made notes of those. And I'll fill in if you need me to.
Okay, just on the plastic bag levy, the information regarding the plastic bag levy is actually, it appears on page 40, but it has been incorporated in others simply because it's actually a very small amount. If one has a look at the 2008-09 year, the amount that's listed there is 285.7 million rand, but of that, only 79 million actually constitutes the plastic bag levy. If the committee is interested in having the detail of the plastic bag levy, the detail of the plastic bag levy is contained in the budget review, and it shows a number of years' collections in terms of the plastic bag levy. Now, the question was also asked whether this was, when it was collected, was it effectively utilized for that purpose? Now, the effective utilization for that does not fall within the SARS domain, so I'll have to defer to my Treasury colleague to respond to that one. I'll just on the, I think you'll come. Okay. I'm not sure if he's in it. Okay, you, in any case, just want to think about that. Just on the question there was on the 2008, why there has actually been a decline in the number of taxpayers assessed. You will remember that we indicated that this data was extracted on the 31st of March 2009. Now, normally extension is granted to the submission of tax returns all the way up until the end of February, specifically for the 2008 tax year. So that would mean taxpayers actually had up until the end of February to submit those returns, and then SARS then still had to process the returns and issue assessments. Now, SARS has not managed to assess the difference between the 1st of March and the end of March when we actually when the data was extracted. The latest bulletin would probably place that number as having been assessed at closer to about 4 million taxpayers. So it has increased quite drastically. The question was also asked on specifically on the corporate entities, also on the register, why the register actually increased from 1.5 million to 1.8 million. And then the number of assessments issued declined from 379,000 to about 189,000. Again, if one looks at the 2008 tax year, SARS normally grants extension for the submission of a tax return up to 12 months after the end of a financial year, which would mean for the 2008 tax year, a company with a December year end actually only needs to submit its tax return during December 2009. So actually very, very few of the 2008 tax returns were actually due for submission at the time that the extract was done. Just to make sure that the impression is not created that SARS actually loses money because of this delay, the majority, if you have a look at the breakdown in tax, you will see that the majority of the tax is actually collected via the provisional tax system. And if you have a look, the provisional tax of the total tax that is collected probably constitutes about 99 to 98% of the total collections, simply because SARS also, during the assessment process, they collect taxes, but they also refund taxes. So, but the net position of that is that the majority of the taxes are collected on the provisional tax system, and we do collect the taxes when the taxes are due. It's just that the assessment process still needs to happen after we've collected those taxes to ensure that SARS actually retains those taxes and do not release those taxes with refunds. Then a question was asked on the PIT reductions and the tax relief that was granted. Although we say there is a reduction in the contribution to total tax revenue, PIT did still significantly increase I mean, if one just has a look at the extent of collections from individuals, for the 2008-09 year, we collected close on 200 billion. So roughly a third of the money still comes from individuals, just that their relative contribution to the total tax revenue has declined slightly. Also, during times of economic downturn, then the corporate tax obviously takes a far bigger dip than what the personal tax would be. So for the 2009-10 year, during which time collections significantly declined from the 625 billion that was collected during 2008-09. If one has a look at the corporate collections, the corporate collections declined substantially, whereas collections from individuals still increased. So for the 2009-10 year, there's actually a substantial turnaround in the composition of the contribution by the various taxes. Also, just on the tax relief again, just maybe the fiscal drag, maybe it's worthwhile just quickly explaining what is meant by the fiscal drag relief that is given. It merely means that if, for example, your taxable income is about 100 rand and you pay 10 rand worth of tax, it means your effective tax rate is 10%. And if inflation during the year is 8%, it means your income will go from 100 rand to 108 rand. All that the fiscal relief does, it just ensures that your effective tax rate still remains at 10%, so that we only then tax 10% of the 108 rand. Because due to the progression of the tax bracket, it could be that you actually fall into a higher tax bracket. And because you fall into a higher tax bracket, you could actually end up paying 40% of that increase in tax. So this is just to ensure that that doesn't happen. And the table 2.3 actually just illustrates that the tax relief as granted by Treasury has actually achieved this, because the effective tax rate overall has remained in the band of 21.7 to 21.8%. The only year that it dropped significantly, it dropped to 21.1, and that was the year that the significant tax relief was granted to taxpayers, to individual taxpayers.
To add to
The thing which I think that I need to speak to is the effect of the job losses, especially now over the past years. If we haven't seen the impact, and we believe our analysis show that because most of the job losses took place in the very low income brackets, that's number one. But however, that was also offset to a degree by the amount of settlement that people received, final settlement, not final settlements, but job, when they lose their jobs, they get paid out certain amounts. But the effect is not major. We don't see it to be threatening the PAT base, although it is extremely regrettable that these job losses. But what we do see now quite recently, and it might be off the topic, but is that we see an increased uptake of jobs in the automotive industry. So there is some trends that are happening in different sectors which are encouraging. But you want to speak to the president there, Levy? Or
do you want to say?
I think my colleague has indicated that he would send a formal report to the committee on the plastic bag, that he will extract the data from the budget review.
Doctor?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my question was a bit misunderstood. You partially answered it, and I know that you're going to carry on answering, but it was a tax. My understanding is that it was a tax to change behavior, because that's what it says in this document. So my question is more specifically about the behavioral economic side of that, to say, did it actually change the behavior? So you collected 79 million rand through this thing, but your intention was to influence behavior by levying the tax. Now, do you know whether it was successful or not? That's my question. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just maybe in response to that, I unfortunately don't have the collection numbers with me. I only have collection numbers for 2 years. Now, I don't think there was a change in the rate. So the only indication as to whether it's effective or not would obviously be in terms of the size of the collections. If the size of the collections reduced, then it would be indicative that it has actually influenced behavior. And looking at, I can unfortunately only look at the 2008 and the 2009 tax fiscal years. During the 2008 fiscal year, we collected 86.3 million, which, and then 2009 is 78.5, which actually means that there was a slight decrease, probably about 10% decrease in the collection of the levy. Just looking at the collections, I'm assuming that it did influence behavior. I cannot say it for a fact, but just looking at the collection figure. There was another question I think that we didn't answer, just on CIT and the increase in compliance and the gap, if any. Maybe just on the CIT itself, if one actually goes and has a look at the detail, one will see that very few of the companies actually end up paying the majority of the tax. For the older years, where the data is a bit more complete, it's in the region about 0.1% of the companies actually end up paying about 57% of the tax. So the really big companies do actually pay. In terms of compliance and the effect of the economy, there was really a huge increase in the collection of taxes from the mining sector during the period of the commodity boom. And as significant as that increase was during that period, as significant was the decline during the financial crisis as well. In going forward, there will be significant focus on medium businesses. We've also indicated, Randall indicated, in the future publications that we will have a section on small business corporations. Our statistics on the small business corporations actually show that there has been a very large uptake of this dispensation that is available to taxpayers. And I think at the moment there's probably about 70,000 to 80,000 taxpayers that is registered under the small business corporation, which is a significant increase from the prior year. When we do release the statistics, it will be obvious. And the relief to these smaller business corporations are significant. SARS, for example, allows them to depreciate their assets at a faster rate. They pay tax at a lower rate than the normal corporate entity as well. So there are significant advantages to registering as a small business corporation.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to belabor the point about the plastic bags, but it's important because the issue is this. My understanding is that there was a tax levied on a certain type of bag or on plastic bags, okay? So if you're saying, because I didn't have it here, if the number is going up, it means that you...
The number was going down.
Yes, okay.
Down.
Then it would influence. Okay, thank you.
So the 2008 was the 83.
Honorable Des
van Rooyen. Yes, I think maybe as a suggestion to concretize on this response, if we assigned the presenters to provide a detailed analysis on the impact of these particular things, I think that will assist a lot at the later stage.
Could we be on the plastic bag?
Maybe as a way of probably making a recommendation, just following on what Honorable Van Rooyen is saying. First, I think this is a very useful interaction and useful information to the committee. But equally, I think I'm told this is for the first time that we are called for the committee to come and present tax statistics or trends. Therefore, it does also tell us that historically you saw your role as that of collecting data and not really putting too much analysis into it. Because even in your own slide, you're saying this information is for economists, researchers, and policymakers. So you leave the interpretation of your own observation let me say, the interpolation and extrapolation of this information to other parties. Yes, it is true. But if I was just to I think slide number 2 on the national tax overview of revenue collection. National tax constitutes 98% of South Africa's tax revenue. For a layman, if I say unpack this thing, and you say an equivalent of 26.9% of the GDP in 2008 and 2009, and 2008-2000 GDP, the total budgeted revenue as a percentage of GDP was 26%. I don't really get what is it that you're saying here. And I want to link that to your regional or provincial spread of your tax base. How they were constituting about 52%. Yeah, Gauteng province accounts for 39% of the taxpayers, but in terms of tax revenue collection, revenue base 52%. Obviously, I think most of the companies, when they say they are headquarters, will be residing in Johannesburg. For us, in terms of the fiscus, in terms of planning and so on and so forth, because this thing has got a far-reaching impact even in terms of municipalities, revenue collection, revenue base for municipalities, and so on and so forth. Because you'll find that their actual economic activity is taking place elsewhere, but the revenue base is actually accounted for in another province. So for me, you know, when we engage, that is what I sent to you. Talk to your presentation. Tell us a story about these figures. If you just present the story, I mean, the figures as they are, you don't tell us much. You don't empower the committee in terms of analyzing this data. So I'm saying in future when we interact, it will be better that you yourself don't say this information is more important for policymakers, for researchers, for economists, because in your own right, you have to understand those issues and the impact of this analysis.
If I may just respond quite briefly to it, if you allow me to, yes, the tax statistics was intended to be just numbers in tables and being sent out for interpretation. But I also would like to take up your point is that in our analysis, because we are responsible for advising the minister with regards to tax trends and with expected budget revenues and all of those things. So certainly, yes, our analysis go a lot deeper than what is presented in the tax statistics. So we have our own view on certain things. We have to, of course, balance that view with the sensitivity that the minister's prerogative to decide on policy. But yes, so I just want to make sure that it's not just us generating numbers and putting in tables. This informs our entire tax planning, it informs our reporting, it informs our contribution to the fiscal debates that are happening. And we should come to a stage where we need to find a way to share that richness that underpins the data. So, for instance, by the example that you've used, the importance of the tax to GDP is very important because that tells you the tax burden that's placed on a country and whether you are on the right benchmark with regards to your peer countries which you want to compare yourself with, the type of trade relations that you should form, the trade balances. So there's a lot of knock-on effects and knock-on things, as you pointed out, that results from this data. With regards to the provincial split, we have begun to initiate a project, but analysis, that actually look at local provincial GDP and compare that with the tax that's collected and whether that's effective if you compare it with a bigger picture. Because at the moment what we presented to you is a national figure. The effectiveness of tax administration in the KZN will then be lifted out and say, are we extracting from this economy the right amount of tax? And that will give another further talking point that policymakers can engage with. So, yes, we need to find a way where we share some of the richness that we encounter on our journey, on our analysis, with the committee. But for the purpose of the publication, it was a deliberate approach not to include any analysis.
Maybe just on that, we had a look at the publications of Australia and of New Zealand, of the United Kingdom and the United States. All those publications actually even have less text than what we have. They mainly focus just on providing data tables. The Australians, however, also include examples of the forms that need to be completed that raises the various taxes. Randall's comment on the GDP as well. The GDP, the tax GDP figure is really important because it actually gives an indication of GDP is the value of the goods that's produced in the country as a whole. So the tax GDP ratio actually reflects SARS's ability to raise taxes on that value that is created. So a very slight movement in the tax GDP ratio upwards or downwards could result in huge yields or huge losses to the fiscus.
No. You still want to come back? No. Right. No. I think we are at one. We're just saying for the purposes of enriching our discussions as we move on, let's try to incorporate. A publication is a publication, but a presentation is different. You know, in a presentation, you need to go a little bit deeper. You see, if you want the minister in his text or in his revenue proposal not to keep on going back to the same sources of revenue, you need to go a little bit deeper. Your PIT, in terms of your presentation, personal income tax, what does it constitute in terms of your total revenue collection? 43%. Yeah. Now it has gone to 31%. You have got, in 2008, 5.5 million registered taxpayers. Now, in your way forward, you say future developments currently under consideration are expansion of PIT data to include a breakdown of the income of the taxpayers, e.g. salaries, commissions, investment, incomes, and the rest. It's still within the same bracket, basically. And some of the issues that we also begin to pick up from the public, it's like there's too much shift. As much as there's tax relief in terms of PIT, but there's a burden. Let me not say this a burden, but I think the huge burden of tax collection is continuously residing on few individuals, if one were to put it that way. So your analysis is more around the same bracket. You are going to cascade it and say, how much more can we still get within this bracket? I don't see it getting broader than what you are actually looking at, except to analyze it further. That's my own interpretation. I may be wrong in terms of the way forward. Perhaps let me pause here and take your response.
Okay, but Chair, I think we just need to distinguish the proposed analysis we're taking forward are not necessarily proposed policy that is under consideration by our colleagues and ourselves, of course, in Treasury. So what we're saying there is that we just want to have a deep, better understanding of the PIT collections and the contributions so that we can disaggregate those commissions. We know how many people get commission, how many people live off investment income, and that feed that into the policy discussion. And if there then subsequent to that there are policy that emanate from this analysis, that will then address what you're saying. But I think also the whole question of the appropriateness of your tax mix and the state of development for a particular country, that is a massive debate. We've seen in the UK that they increased the VAT by two percentage points. But what people don't realize is that in the same hand they dropped the CIT to create investment, climate friendly things. So this whole mix of tax structures is subject to policy interventions that have a major reflection on approach to the countries, how they deal with the economic crisis. And in fact, what we found in our literature and in our research is that if you increase the tax burden by 1%, and I'm not saying where you should increase it, but just overall in the country, that has a definite effect on the GDP. It slows down the GDP by as much as 2 to 3%. So everything you do has a kickback or a ramification, and those mix of things are so complicated that even sometimes we get confused.
I'm not sure as to whether Honorable Van Roon's question was answered. Okay. The
work in progress.
Okay, it's work in progress. The last comment from my side, Randa and your team, is on the corporate income tax. It has increased. As much as PIT has declined from 43% to 31%, and then you see the CIT, which is a good thing, from 10% to 26%. I want to have your comment, because one of the things that has happened is that SARS has come up with a proposal in terms of trust companies, dormant companies, CCs, so that we can clean the database of what you call this place, Register of Companies. Yeah, CIPRO. You can clean that database. Now, the increase in your CIT, is there any relationship between that process and the positive growth? Is it because as you clean the system, you are able to see and focus on the active companies that need to actually pay tax?
I'll respond to that. Just on that, although the register is so big versus the number assessed, as I indicated in the presentation, there's a large number of companies on the register which we cannot actually remove, simply because these companies would, for example, be a company that was utilized in the past by the individual to actually purchase his house in it. And there's no trading whatsoever happening in this company. So the company has to remain dormant on our systems until such time as the taxpayer decides he's going to sell the property, at which time capital gains tax needs to be collected. So that's also why you find that these huge numbers there, but no activity on the company. And then there's also, I'm sure you're aware that if you open any financial magazine, you can actually go and buy a company that has been pre-registered. Yes, you just... all these companies that's registered at FIPRO by the shelf companies automatically comes onto the SARS register. The shelf company then sells it on to, let's say, for example, to Randall, and then Randall just decides, but he doesn't want to do business, and he doesn't even bother to deregister at SARS. So that's why we have this whole problem with the companies. Your question pertaining to to what extent have removing the companies actually allowed us to focus more on the companies that actually do pay? The large business center was actually started by SARS, I think, during 1999 or 2000. And the large business center purely focuses on these very large corporates. Now, the very large corporates probably end up paying 90% of the tax or 85% of the tax. So there's definitely far more closer scrutiny of the activities of these companies, and also there's also far more scrutiny of the activities of the companies between the different type of taxes. So that if a company pays a lot of VAT, we do make sure that it's also reflected on the income tax side, and if he employs lots of people, that it's also reflected on all the different spheres. So, yes, there has been greater focus, but the focus has, it's not been greater focus because of a reduction in the register. It's more greater focus because we focus on the biggest payers.
Any other thing you want to say to the committee?
We also welcome this interaction and engagement, and because we also, even if though we didn't have a formal workshop, it shows that, you know, we have to focus a bit more on not just trying to put forward bland tables, but to put a bit more meaning to it. And so we'll find a way. We need to think hard about how we can enrich this publication.
Thanks
for all the committee members also. And from our side, it was a bit nervous, but it went learning experience.
All right. Okay, honourable members, I think we should take this opportunity to thank the presenters, and we're looking forward to have more interactions with yourself. I think it's quite a useful exercise because it helps us to integrate our knowledge and information that we need to synthesize and communicate. What you should also take into consideration is that which you can't communicate public, we are better positioned to can say it to you and to the public. And hence will continuously so ask, and correctly so ask, for more information. That don't give us raw data. Talk to your figures. Make a story out of it. Don't under-communicate your own achievements and your work. Because people out there, they want to know what you're doing, what is it that they can assist you with. But without information, it's very, very difficult for people to assist you in your processes of trying to achieve your objectives as an organization. Thank you very much. Yeah, we have come to the end of our deliberation, committee members. Thanks. Yeah. I hope you have not done about it.